This is Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm Sarah Felberg, editor of Las Vegas Weekly. And if you pick up this week's issue, you'll see a very familiar face on the cover. We've got Jimi Hendrix, shot by local rock photographer Robert Knight. This week, Robert takes us into his home and into his archives to check out some memorable photos from moments that mattered in classic rock.
This is Las Vegas Weekly Managing Editor Spencer Patterson, and you're listening to Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm joined tonight by Las Vegas-based rock photographer Robert Knight. Robert, thanks for being here.
Oh, thank you, Spencer.
So this week's print issue of Las Vegas Weekly features some of your images. You were kind enough to let us into your home and pick some out and tell us some of your stories. We've got shots of the Rolling Stones, Carlos Santana, Led Zeppelin. Maybe start at the beginning and sort of, I know there's a lot of twists and turns in your story, but maybe just, you know, tell people who may not be familiar with your story how it started.
Well, I'm the son of a Baptist minister, and I grew up in Honolulu, Hawaii, and it was a Southern Baptist kind of household, and we weren't allowed to listen to the radio or rock music or go to movies, and I was pretty sheltered. And I kind of lived that alien existence in Hawaii because I didn't swim, I didn't surf, I didn't like the beach. So I didn't have much to do there. But when I was about 14 or 15 years old, I was walking through Waikiki and I found some magazines that some British tourists left behind. And in them, they contained photos of what I didn't really understand what it was, but it was these long-haired, really fashionable-looking rock stars of bands I'd never heard of. And I was just really drawn to these images that Gerard Mankiewicz and some of these other photographers had done in London.
And this was like in the mid-60s, right?
Like 65, 1965. Okay. And there was a catalog you could send away for. And so what I did is I sent away for the albums of the people whose photos were in the magazines. And I literally had in Hawaii, before probably they came out in America in a lot of cases, a lot of these albums by the Yardbirds and the Pretty Things and the Who and the Rolling Stones, and also a lot of unreleased stuff that they hadn't put out in America. And at my high school, which was Kaimuki High School, they had a thing at lunchtime where they played music over the intercom, and they let me come in, and they let me, before you even knew what a DJ was, I was playing this music, and a whole lot of sort of musical people on the campus sort of found me out. We had a shared common interest in this music, and I kind of got in this inner circle of artists and guitar players and painters and all this sort of stuff. But then once the music sort of stopped, they kind of realized that I really wasn't an artist myself, and I was sort of pushed out. And I was, you know, the guitar player that kind of made some remark about, you know, I didn't have any art of my own. And ouch. I remember, So then I was trying to figure out how could I get to London, because I thought if I got to London, I could meet these guys. And I literally, again, found some books in an alley and trained myself on the OAG guide and became one of the youngest travel agents in the United States. I started at 15 and a half, worked 6 months, and qualified for agent discount tickets to London. So I had a 95% discount, and it was $240 round trip to go to London first class. So I went there as a kid, and literally—
By yourself.
Yeah, I went there by myself, and they were making this movie called Blow Up. And the theme of it was a sort of fashion music photographer in swinging 60s London. And the band that I was obsessing on, the Yardbirds, were actually in the movie.
Hey, you played us a clip of that when we were at your house the other day. And I saw the shot where Jeff Beck destroys his instrument.
Yeah, it was like the first time anybody kind of wrecked equipment on stage. You know, this was pre-Jimi Hendrix. So a little bell went off in my head, and I said, look, I've got to become a photographer. This is my entree. It was my passport to be in the room with musicians. So I literally went back to Hawaii and caddied for about 5 months to get enough money to buy my first Nikon camera and a couple lenses.
Do you remember how much that cost, the camera?
Oh, you know, it was probably $400 or something.
A lot of money then.
Yeah, right? It was like a lot of money, and my parents didn't have the money. So then I had all this equipment, and it was like, okay, now what am I going to do? So I saw that, you know, the Vietnam War was going to draft me. My parents were putting pressure on me to go to school. And I happened to see somewhere where Bill Graham was going to have all these bands in the summer of 1968 play the Fillmore. And so I convinced my parents I needed to go to the San Francisco Art Institute Perfect. That was the only photography school in San Francisco that I could find. So I went there, and my classmate was Annie Leibovitz, who turned out also to be a rather famous photographer.
Sure.
And I spent my nights at the Fillmore. The first band I ever photographed was Jeff Beck with Rod Stewart on their first tour as a solo artist.
And he had been your original
hero.
He'd
been like the guy in the Yardbirds. And so when I met Jeff, he tipped me that Jimmy Page was putting a band together and that I needed to keep my eye out for the new Yardbirds. The second concert I ever photographed was Jimi Hendrix. And I literally walked in with a camera and people parted the way, you know, and got out of my way until I walked to the front of the stage, stood there with one roll of film and took 14 pictures. And last month, they just reissued the Jimi Hendrix Live at the Winterland and used all 14 of my photos. Wow. And all the photos I did on my first concert with Jeff Beck were just done in a reissue package for the album Beckola. So it's like this really cyclical story of that. But once you shoot with Jeff Beck and Jimi Hendrix, and then I worked with Led Zeppelin, which was the new Yardbirds. I was the first photographer in America to work with the band. I was at their very first show. So right away, I had like probably the three greatest guitar players on earth. And from there, it just was not, there was no problem getting to anybody else.
Right, sure. Now, you mentioned just for the Hendrix show, walking in, the waters kind of parted. I mean, it's obviously a lot different these days. Things have changed.
Well, there weren't a lot of photographers then. I mean, it was really definitely a trade or a skill that you needed to perfect. You couldn't just say you're a photographer. Today, you can go buy a digital camera and call, okay, now I'm a photographer. And you ask for a backstage pass to shoot a concert. And now there's 60 photographers trying to get into a pit, you know, and it's like a cacophony of you know, digital cameras. Some of them rather low tech I've seen in the pit nowadays. But when I went there, I was the only photographer. There was no one else shooting.
Another big difference in the stories you told me between what we see now is you were actually spending time with these bands, not just sort of working, but actually just hanging out, getting to know them, spending all this extra time with them. That's not something that happens a lot now.
You know, these were, I mean, if you thought of them as like really small-time younger bands, that would have been the picture. And they were really happy that anybody was taking an interest in them, particularly Led Zeppelin, because Rolling Stone panned their first album.
That's right.
And I convinced a promoter in Hawaii to bring them to Hawaii. I left the San Francisco Art Institute. He sent me out to the airport to meet them since I was the only one the band knew. So I brought him back and was driving him around Honolulu in my Volkswagen, but I got these amazing offstage shots of them surfing and, you know, doing all these crazy things that you would never see Led Zeppelin normally or Jimi Hendrix doing, you know, in bathing suits and stuff, you know.
And you got the shot of Zeppelin that I'm sure everybody's seen of them.
The Honolulu airport carrying the tapes to Led Zeppelin 2 in their arms. And they were working as they were on their very first tour. In every city they were going to, they'd try to find a studio and lay down more layers on this second album. So it was pretty amazing. And I still see the guys, you know, and I run into them. And I just had lunch last week in London with the old tour manager, Richard Cole. And we were laughing about that first day because I also met Tiny Tim that day with Led Zeppelin.
And as you said, I mean, the more you did, the more easily things came.
And then when I went back to Hawaii, I became kind of a journalistic photographer for the local, kind of their version of the weekly, which was called Sunbums. And I became the official concert photographer, and I shot literally every concert that came to Hawaii. And then the promoters would say, listen, we have an artist like this guy who's going to be the next Bob Dylan, and he's here for 10 days. Can you look after him? And it was Elton John. And then it was Alice Cooper. And there were all these people that when they'd come to Hawaii, the promoters would ask me to look after them because they didn't know what to do with them, you know.
So right.
I would arrange for Alice Cooper to play tennis with all my friends and play golf. And we went tuna fishing. And there was a great story with Alice Cooper in Honolulu where it was over Halloween. And I got invited to a Halloween party. And I asked him if he wanted to go. And he went, yes, I'll go. And I said, what are you going to go as? He says, Alice Cooper. And he dressed up and no one knew that it was actually him. They actually thought it was, you know, somebody posing as Alice Cooper.
The perfect costume.
Unbelievable.
You mentioned Elton John. He's somebody, obviously, who plays here.
Yeah.
What was he like in those days, in those early days to shoot?
I mean, he was unbelievable. But again, you know, there wasn't a lot of people paying attention. And he invited me to the show and literally put me on the stage in a chair. And he would play a song and stop and turn and pose. So I have all these unbelievable photos of him in concert, but then he's looking at me and he'd turn around and he would stare at me, and you know, and I got these fantastic pictures. And then we developed a friendship, and then every year he'd come, whether he was on tour or not, and come and hang out, and we would, you know, arrange tennis tournaments and whatever for him with John Newcomb. And I mean, it was just a blast. I just saw him a couple weeks ago here in Vegas, the last night of the show here.
I mean, so, watching the movie Rock Prophecy, 2009 documentary, yep, is about your story. And one of the striking things about that and just hearing your stories is the way you've stayed in touch with a lot of these, yep, guys. Not just like professionally, but it seems like really there are friendships there.
Yeah, we have a lot of really deep friendships. And, you know, and in some cases now I'm kind of looking after young musicians and I'm actually sort of managing the children of the people that I worked with when I was young, because there's two young guitar players that are the son of Brad Whitford from Aerosmith. And it's kind of ironic because Aerosmith was one of the bands that I was hanging out with in Hawaii in 1975. You know, Steven Tyler came over to our house for breakfast. And I mean, it was, came down to my studio. We spent the day driving around Hawaii. It was pretty crazy, you know?
Now, you mentioned the young musicians now. I mean, in the film, a big part of it is you with the band and then also with the young guitar, yep, player, and you're really trying to help them out, not just to shoot photos, yeah, of them, but you're really like trying to spearhead their cause.
It was interesting because the guy that did the movie was the guy that does Will and Grace and Seinfeld. In Boston Comedy, he's a big producer of comedy, and he wanted to do this movie, and he brought in a director that knew nothing about music who was really young. So for me, it was really interesting because I had to convince the guy that people like Slash and Jeff Beck were relevant. But he, right, kind of didn't get the older guys, and he was like, well, look, if you are the guy that, you know, worked with Zeppelin and all these people early on, find three people that we don't know. Help them. We'll film it. And hopefully by the time the movie comes out, they'll have amounted to something.
It's a cool
one
idea.
Of the bands was Sick Puppies, who's had seven top 20 songs in the last 3 years. Tyler Bryant, who was only 15 when we filmed him, is now been on the touring circuit with Jeff Beck for a year. And, you know, the kid is exploding right now. So it's sort of a natural extension now that because of the movie being on heavy rotation on PBS and Netflix, I get about 300 people a month emailing me to give me undiscovered talent to look at. So
you're another way in now.
Yeah, I mean, you know, and there were some people that came from Hawaii yesterday that came all the way here to meet me to try to see if I could help them with their son, and they brought me a big bag of Kona coffee, so I was really happy with that.
It's a good idea.
Yeah, it was good.
I'm sure you get asked a lot of times about your favorite shoots. Maybe what are some shoots that, you know, maybe they're not the most, you know, famous names, but when you look back, they were some of the best times or some of the best images.
Yeah, well, Jeff Beck, I mean, you know, I had more fun shoots with him because I went to his house and we'd go to hot rod races and we would do all these crazy extra things that you normally didn't associate with rock and roll.
And he's a pretty private guy.
He's a very private guy, you know, and very moody. And I say, you know, undoubtedly the greatest rock guitar player in the world. Jimi Hendrix, that was his favorite guitar player. And Jeff was doing things. When my wife and I, Marianne, who's also a photographer here in Las Vegas, when we went to Jeff Beck's wedding, Paul McCartney walked up to me, and I'd never met McCartney before in my life. And he said, I heard you work with Jimi Hendrix. I said, yeah. He said, Jeff Beck was Jimi Hendrix before Jimi thought about being Jimi Hendrix. And I said, really? And he goes, yeah, because, you know, they opened on the first Beatles tour, the Yardbirds, and we saw all this before Jimmy. So, I mean, I was like, I'm not going to argue with Paul McCartney.
So Beck was definitely one of those magical.
You know, yeah, and then, you know, he replaced Eric Clapton, who was in the Yardbirds, mm-hmm, and they recommended Jimmy Page, and he was too busy being a session guy, and he recommended Jeff Beck. So,
now, another thing that you're well-known for, and I'm sure it's something you wish wasn't the case,
yes,
is being the last guy to shoot Stevie Ray Vaughan, and yeah, really the only guy to shoot that particular,
yeah,
concert, as it turned out.
Yeah, I met Stevie Ray in 1989 with Jeff Beck. We did this 50-day tour of the United States, and we bonded, and he asked me to come to this special concert in Alpine Valley, Wisconsin. It was a two-day event, 50,000 people each night, and it turned out to be the last time he ever played. And I had spent the entire day, you know, photographing him, his band, him with Clapton, him with Robert Cray. And Eric had dismissed all the other photographers on the first day. So I was the only one allowed, and I was the only one there. And I captured what I thought was, like, you know, really this fantastic day. And then when I woke up the next morning, it was, you know, a nightmare for me. And people were calling and demanding the photos for this and that. And I refused to give anything out for 2 years.
I'm sure you got offered a lot of money for those shots.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the decision to hold on to them for that.
Well, it's like blood money. I just, you know, it'd be like having your best friend die in a car wreck and then someone saying, can you give me pictures of the car wreck? You know, yeah. And you're just like, I couldn't deal with that. I just could not deal with it. And then, of course, you know, Eric knew that I had those pictures and everything as well. And then I saw Eric a few years later and he actually thanked me for not exploiting that day. You know, I mean, you know, and... I mean, it was a big deal. I mean, you know, Eric lost friends too, and it was really, you know, one of Eric's people that it didn't go on the helicopter that allowed Stevie to go on it. He wasn't meant to be on it. It was just like one of those things with the Big Bopper or any of those other guys. You know, Waylon Jennings missed the plane and he lived and the Big Bopper didn't, you know.
It just seems like such a different mindset from what we see so often now. The paparazzi, people trying to get just that one shot that's going to make them rich. I mean, you had a whole bunch of shots. You opted not to do it. I mean, that seems like a...
Well, I mean, that's the flip-flop in photography today, because when we were younger, we wouldn't think about putting out a photo of someone that didn't look good. I mean, you know, and now the most money you can make is when you have an artist that's made a mistake or doing an infidelity or picking their nose or doing a drug or drinking. I mean, a picture of Lindsay Lohan drinking vodka right now is worth more money than, you know, any picture of Bob Dylan from the 60s, you know?
I mean, how does it, do you still take pleasure out of going to a shoot and going to a concert and being around that stuff? Or at this point, are you sort of distancing yourself from...
Still love the action. I love getting in the pit, because to me, it's some of the hardest photography you can do, because you can't control anything. You know, if you're a studio photographer, you're kind of controlling everything. You go to a live event, you have no idea what's next, what's the lights are going to be, where the artist is going to move. So it's kind of challenging, and you're in there with a bunch of other photographers and, you know, you got to outsmart them and get in the right position and anticipate it. So I kind of definitely still enjoy that, you know.
I'm sure you have some great tricks of the trade that you've learned over the years that some of those guys don't know. You're probably not going to tell them about now.
Yeah,
right?
But one of my tricks of the trade is my hat. I wear a beret.
I see
and,
right now.
And it's like a logo. And these guys, no matter where I'm at in the world, will spot the beret.
And that's musicians know
musicians
come up on
you know,
stage
right in the middle of a Rolling Stone concert. Ronnie Wood will shout out, "Hey, I know Robert, you've been in Paris lately." You know, I mean, it's like they orient to the hat, and if they see the hat in the pit, they'll come over and they'll play up to me, and it's kind of a, you know, it's been a way to kind of like a fishing lure to get people to come to your side of the pit.
Have you worn it since?
I've worn it a very long time. I've always, you know, worn a hat, so. That's been kind of a trademark.
Sounds good. Well, Robert, I really want to thank you for coming on today. It's been a lot of fun talking about this stuff again.
Yep.
Y'all take care of yourself. We'll see you next time, okay?
We're back with more of Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. I'm Sarah Feldberg, editor of Las Vegas Weekly. And from rock legends to a dance music great, deadmau5 has signed a residency with Encore Beach Club and XS Nightclub starting January 2nd. And director of nightclub entertainment Z Zandy is joining me to talk about what we can expect from the man in the mouse head. Thank you so much, Z.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good. So this is some really exciting news for you guys. What great news.
I know. It's been kind of hard to keep it bottled up for a while now.
So when you decided, or when the clubs decided that you wanted to pursue a residency with deadmau5, why was he the right person?
I think as a team, we just feel he's amazing. He's very unique. He has a great style, you know, different from everybody else. So I think it kind of makes him stand out a little bit above, you know, different kind of genres of music.
Sure. And he's actually been playing in Las Vegas for a few years now. Is that right?
He has. I remember the first time that I saw him was at Empire Ballroom. And that was years ago when he had his Saxon Berlin track out.
Sure.
And I remember when I heard that track, I was like, okay, this guy's going to be huge. And then I was fortunate enough to be able to book him at other venues, you know, before I came over to the Wynn, and it's great that I'm able to work with him and his team again.
And of course, one of the things that everybody knows about him is that he wears this incredible costume piece, this mouse head, everywhere he goes when he performs, and it's become a total icon for him. I know I've seen photos of people in the audience wearing their own mouse heads, and it's so recognizable. He wore it at, I believe it was the MTV Video Awards recently. And everywhere you go, you see it. When you first saw him at Empire Ballroom, was he wearing the head?
You know, I'm trying to remember. That was quite a few years back ago, but I do believe he was running ahead. And every show I've seen him perform in, he's always run ahead. He can't wear it the whole time because I've actually been able to try it on and it gets a little hot under there.
You've tried it on.
Yeah, actually twice he had put the melt head on me in the middle of a performance. So it was kind of a unique experience.
Wow. What does that feel like?
It was nice. I loved it. It was like, you know, it's like, well, I got the intention for a minute there.
That is so cool. It's such an incredible thing. And I know he's come up with so many different designs for it now that it's not just the one mouse head. Do you think he'll be doing different heads for different shows during his residency?
Absolutely. And I believe that they have some kind of contest coming up soon, too. You'll have to keep your eye on his Facebook and Twitter. But I believe they have some contests they're doing all over the world for somebody to create a mouse head, and he's going to design it off there. I don't know the details, but I know something like that's in the works.
That is great. And when he plays a show, what's the energy that he brings? Why is he a special resident?
I think he's special because his style is unique. He plays, you know, he plays all his own music. The technology that he uses is like a studio laptop and various controllers that he's created. You know, it's different than just, you know, throwing in CDs and playing other people's music sometimes.
Sure.
It's unique because he just has his own experience.
Wow, that sounds great. And he's also known for doing fairly elaborate productions. Are you guys going to be working to produce something special for his residency?
We are definitely right now working on the stage and the process of producing a unique experience for coming to XS or Encore Beach Club. But, you know, you'll have to come to the venue to see that.
And when is the residency getting started?
January 2nd is our first show, which is Monday at XS, our industry night. That'll be our first show at XS, and then we'll have our Encore Beach Club show coming up Memorial Day weekend.
Oh, that's great. Do you know how many dates he's going to be playing throughout the year?
We have some dates in the works, but we haven't decided how many yet. But
okay,
there'll be a lot.
That's great. And I remember when XS first opened, there was kind of less of a focus on the superstar resident DJs. Are you guys leaning towards more of the big name electronic dance music acts?
I just think that XS is a beautiful club. It's an amazing club. But with, you know, where music has gone lately and the genre of music on the radio, it has definitely gone more towards electronic music. And it's a phenomenal room. We have great production in there, and it just works very well and it fits.
Definitely. And you were previously at Angel Music Group, is that right?
Angel Management Group.
Angel correct. Management Group, excuse me. And I know that Angel has been booking electronic dance music acts for a long time. Have you sort of seen the industry really take hold here in Las Vegas and it grow?
Well, my entire career at Angel Management Group, which was from when it got created in Las Vegas, I did all their bookings and assisted with others as well. But yeah, I believe definitely it's growing. It's not going anywhere at all.
Was there a moment where you sort of knew this is going to be huge in Las Vegas, that the big name DJs and the electronic dance music was really here to stay and was going to have a big impact on the nightlife industry?
To be honest with you, I've been in this field for 16 years, and I never thought that it would cross over as much as it has. It's always been my passion. I've loved electronic music, house music, trance, whatever you want to call it.
Sure.
I've been a fan of it for 16 years, and it's been my career for all these years now. And I couldn't be more happier. I'm definitely ecstatic that it's, you know, being played everywhere and on the radio as well.
That is so cool.
But never did I think there'd be, you know, EDC in our backyard.
Yeah, I mean, that's an incredible thing. And I know Deadmau5 wasn't at EDC this past year. When he has an exclusive residency with The Wynn and Encore, would he still be able to play a festival like EDC in Las Vegas?
I mean, you know, that's just between The Wynn and Deadmau5's team. I'm not quite sure about that, but, you know, it's not a yes or it's not a no.
Sure. Did you get a chance to attend the festival this past summer?
I did. I was lucky enough to be able to attend all 3 days.
Wow. That is a lot of time out there. What did you think? How did it compare to what you were expecting?
Well, I've actually been to EDC before, and I've, you know, been to different festivals, and I've been involved with the music for so long that I have seen production like that. But I do have to say that it being in the, you know, the backyard of the Las Vegas Strip, you know, it was definitely very, I can't even explain it with the words.
Yeah, I have to say, I went out
euphoric.
There. It was, I went out on Sunday night. It was my first time at EDC, and I was blown away. the atmosphere was incredible. The vibe, so many people just really enjoying the same experience together.
Oh, and absolutely. And it was such,
it was
such
wonderful.
Great talent there on Sunday too. Such amazing talent.
Definitely. And I feel like for me, one of the things that struck me with EDC and with kind of the way Las Vegas nightlife has been going in general is just that you really see people coming to town almost exclusively to see these DJs, that they're booking their flights around who's playing at the club or what festival is in town that weekend. Do you think you see that happening where people are deciding the dates to come based on a DJ?
Absolutely. I think years ago, especially like when Ice was here, you know, talent would come once every 4 months, or, you know, the big talent, the Tiestos, you know, the Cascades of the world, the Deep Dishes of the world. So that back then it was a little bit more difficult because you really had to plan it. But nowadays, if you come any weekend, there's an amazing talent playing every single weekend in Vegas and weekday.
Sure. And for XS and where you're booking, what are your kind of goals when you're looking for artists?
We like artists that just, you know, basically just create an amazing energy with the crowd. We always want to make sure that our customers and everybody that's visiting the Wynn and Encore are happy. So as long as the music works for our customers, then, you know, definitely it's something that works for us.
Are there any up-and-coming artists that you think we're going to be seeing in Vegas clubs pretty soon?
You mean people that haven't played here yet?
Yeah, or people that haven't had residencies, people whose names we might not be seeing on billboards every weekend, but that you think are going to have a big impact coming soon?
Well, to be honest with you, at the Wynn, almost every DJ we book, we do put them on a billboard, and we do give them advertisement in the weekly and everything. So I can't really say that any of the upcoming guys aren't already getting that exposure.
Okay. Is there anyone that you haven't seen play Vegas that you would like to see come here?
I would say Loco Dice.
Who is that?
We're going to a whole different genre of music now. I'd actually like Richie Hawtin.
Okay. Richie Hawtin, of course.
That's the underground side of me coming out that doesn't get to come out very often.
I love it.
Last year, I was able to, for my birthday party with myself and DJ Schiff, we brought out Luciano, which is definitely one of my favorites.
Luciano, that is a name I've been hearing a lot recently.
Yep. So Luciano is definitely an experience in Ibiza you have to go and experience for yourself.
That sounds absolutely wonderful. And for people who are excited to see Deadmau5 coming, what should they be prepared for in terms of booking their tickets? When do tickets go on sale?
Tickets actually went on sale yesterday. So, and the ticket prices are still low right now, so go ahead and get them while they're hot.
Sounds great.
Or while they're available, because we did sell out for the last two shows.
Wow, good to know. Warning out there to all of our Deadmau5 fans, get them now because they will sell out probably. And big things on the horizon for New Year's Eve at XS?
We do. Actually, at XS, we have Steve Angelo, which is one of the three gentlemen from Swedish House Mafia. So very excited about that show.
Sounds great. And are tickets on sale for that as well?
Steve Angelo tickets are on sale. The entire weekend is actually on sale.
Wow. Awesome.
Well, and we have a great lineup the whole weekend.
Of course. I would expect nothing less. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Z. It was absolutely a pleasure talking to you.
Oh, thank you very much, too. And hopefully we'll see you at the show.
Certainly. Thank you so much for listening. This has been another episode of Las Vegas Weekly's Radio Mag on KUNV. Thank you to our guests this evening and to our producer, Steven Zeller. You can catch us next week at 91.5 FM at 5:30 on Thursday.